Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Alaska Edition is Lori Townsend.
Hello, thanks for joining us today. Next Tuesday is November 4th, the culmination of this hectic and long election season. Many Alaskans have been going to the polls early, and your final day to vote is next Tuesday. One of your duties as a voter is to select judges for retention. Toward the back of your voter guide, right here, you will find a lot of information about those judges, their basic biographies, everything from their age to what communities they've lived in, what their service has been, their education, political and government positions, and also their ratings from their service and recommendations by the constitutionally mandated Judicial Council as to whether or not that council recommends that those judges are retained. Joining me to talk about the importance of the role that the Judicial Council plays in vetting the work of Alaska's judges are two people intimately familiar with the state's legal system, retired Alaska Supreme Court Chief Justice Walter Bud Carpinetti. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Justice Carpinetti served on the Judicial Council before being appointed to the bench, so we'll be talking about that. Also here today is Senior Superior Court Judge Elaine Andrews. Thank you.
Thank
Judge
you.
Judge Andrews for being here. Judge Andrews served in both Alaska District and Superior Courts and also on the Judicial Conduct Commission. Welcome, both of you. Thank you so much for being here to talk about this important issue today as voters go to the polls in this ongoing frenzy toward the election. The Judicial Council is mandated in the state constitution. Justice Carpinetti, I'd like to start with you. Tell us first about how the Judicial Council goes about its work and your participation when you were a member of it.
Sure. It's a body composed of three lawyers who are appointed by the Board of Governors Association, the Alaska Bar Association Board of Governors, and three laypersons who are appointed by the governor, confirmed by the legislature. And the Chief Justice sits as chair ex officio, which means that he or she doesn't vote unless it's necessary to break a tie, essentially. It goes about its business by gathering information on people who apply for the job. An applicant fills out a very long form, 20 or 25 pages. The council polls all of the attorneys in the state on a person who's applied for the position. It holds public hearings. It has an interview with the applicant about an hour long, and that can be public or private at the applicant's choice. And then it makes a decision as to those people who are the best qualified in a group of applicants to go to the governor. At least two names and as many as however many the council find to be highly qualified go to the governor, and that governor then has 45 days to make an appointment. That's with regard to selection. With regard to retention, as a matter of statutory law, the council has the role of evaluating judges, in effect holding judges accountable when they're on the bench for their service. And it does lots of things. It polls all the attorneys when a judge is coming up for retention. It polls peace officers who appeared in that judge's court. It polls social workers. It polls jurors. It consults with judicial watch groups. It gathers all kinds of information about the judge. It holds hearings, public hearings, so people can come in and give their impressions. It meets with each judge, and it makes a recommendation to the voters, either retain or not retain. I was a member of the council in the late 70s and early 80s as a lawyer member, and then I was the chair ex officio for 3 years from 2009 to 2012. And I can say, I think without fear of any contradiction, that Alaska voters have more information about their judges at their disposal than any voters or any people in the world on with regard to judicial retention. There's massive amounts of information that's published on the website, and so it makes recommendations. Most of the time, of course, the recommendation, hopefully, is to retain, because hopefully they've done a good job at the outset. But occasionally there's a recommendation not to retain, and those reasons are set out.
How does the Alaska Judicial Council system compare to other states?
Well, I think retention analysis like this is pretty rare. Some states don't have it at all, and some have it, but with a much less developed array of facts that are available to the voters. As I said, we provide more information to Alaska voters than any state or country that I'm aware of.
How rare is it that the Judicial Council recommends against retaining a judge?
It's very rare. I haven't gotten the complete breakdown of statistics, but anecdotally, in my time, I was on the council for 3 years. There were around 30 to 35 judges that came up in each retention election, and so that would have been twice during the 3 years that I was there, the way it worked out. So there were probably 60 judges that came before the council, 60 to 70 at that time, who were up for retention. And there was one judge about whom the council recommended a no vote. All the others were yes votes. You know, you can count on maybe one hand in a decade how many you get. It's very rare. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry I don't have the actual statistics, but it's rare.
Sure, that's what I had anticipated. Judge Andrews, I'd like to get you in here now. In 2012, a group targeted a Judge Santan, because of decisions he had made that they had objected to. You spoke out in support of Judge Tan. Tell us what the group objected to and what your support was about.
Well, judges are asked to make difficult decisions, and most of what judges do is day in and day out, non-controversial, non-headline-making work, and that's generally how judges acquire their rating. Are they diligent? Are they fair? Are they impartial? And Judge Tan had been on the bench for quite some period of time, very highly rated, particularly in the area of matters involving children. And a group was targeting the judge for a particular decision, not that he was a judge who lacked talent, a judge who lacked diligence, a judge who lacked impartiality. They just said, we don't like his decision in a particular case, he should go. And certainly the public has the right to be unhappy with the judge's decision. We have retention elections. People can vote a judge out if they want, but they need to understand what the focus of trying to remove the judge is. If you're unhappy with the judge's decision, you do have the right to non-retain them. But this was a judge who had a particularly stellar recommendation, and it was a last-minute attack that didn't give the judge an opportunity to respond, and that seemed fundamentally unfair, and I felt that someone needed to say something, and so I did.
And forgive me for mispronouncing Judge Tan's name. I'm sorry about that. This, we're going to look at a clip of tape here in just a moment from the debate for the state the other night, but when you spoke out, is there a process, when you're a judge on the bench, is it unusual for a judge to do something like that, to come out in public and weigh in on an issue such as retention?
A judge who is sitting, such as Judge Tan, cannot really defend himself unless there is a known opposition. And that's the problem to some extent with what happened there, is that a judge ethically is bound not to respond unless there's organized opposition. And the organized opposition came at the very last minute. Judges are allowed ethically to talk about ways to improve the administration of justice and to speak about that, but a judge who's attacked can only respond once there's public opposition. They cannot go about shoring themselves up about their decisions.
On Wednesday night's debate for the state, Alexander Gutierrez, APRN's state government reporter, posed a question to Governor Parnell about, and his challenger, Bill Walker, about the Judicial Council and a proposed constitutional amendment. Let's watch that piece of tape.
Mr. Parnell, this past session, a constitutional amendment was offered that would change the makeup of the Judicial Council. Some advocates for that measure argued that it was necessary to combat an activist court. Do you believe that the state of Alaska has an activist court? And do you believe there should be changes to the way judges are selected?
So yes, at times I can point to specific decisions and speak to an activist court, but let me speak to the Judicial Council, because that's a hugely important function. The Judicial Council screens people who are applying to be judge, and they send through a number of candidates to the governor for potential appointment. Now, I have taken that role of the governor very seriously, and I've actually interviewed every candidate that the Judicial Council has put forward to me before making a selection. For the most part, the Judicial Council has done a very good job at sending highly qualified people, and I've picked, you know, from Republicans, Democrats, nonpartisans, you name it, they're all represented, they're all high quality. But there have been moments where the public members of the Judicial Council have been overruled, and that is not the tradition. So in other words, on a tie vote, the Chief Justice, typically, this is how Dana Fabe used to do it, she would say that she would side with the public members for that appointment and whether or not they get moved on. I think that principle needs to be returned, but that could be a practice of the existing Judicial Council.
Without necessarily a constitutional amendment to change it.
Correct, but I can tell you if the practice continues and the frustration continues to build on the part of the public with the Judicial Council appearing to manipulate judges through, if that perception builds, you can expect the public to want more change. So I think there's opportunity for the Judicial Council to change that pattern. I think it's something that I have called to the attention of a former Chief Justice after he was no longer in that position.
Now, I would want to mention that Governor Parnell's challenger, Bill Walker, also responded to that question, saying that he didn't see that there was a lot of problem with the Judicial Council, and that if a constitutional amendment were put forward and he were governor, he would want to just review that. So he didn't really weigh in on whether or not he thought that was appropriate. What's your response to what the governor had to say about the Judicial Council's work, but also siding with the public members?
Well, I agree with the governor's first statement. For the most part, the Judicial Council has done a very good job. With regard to the history of how chief justices have voted, I think it's important to know the basic underlying facts in this particular dispute about are the lawyers, to use his words, are the lawyers overruling the public members. They're not. The council, since the records have been kept, has taken over 1,100 votes with regard to people applying for the job of judge and judges who were up for retention. Of that time, the council has been unanimous over 60% of the time in their votes, and over 80% of the time they've been unanimous but for one vote, so 5-1. 6-0, 5-1 over 80% of the time. The number of times that the public members have been on one side and the lawyer members have been on the other side out of over 1,100 votes in our history has been 15 times. So that's about 1% of the time. Of those 15, the chief has sided with the public members 5 times and with the lawyers 10 times. So remarkably small sample either way you look at it. So it's not accurate to talk about the Chief Justice siding with one side or the other to overrule the other side. It just hardly ever happens. Most of the time there's unanimity. But more importantly, I think it's important to understand what the council is supposed to do. The council is supposed to send, in the words of the framers, the tallest timber to the governor. Now, if you have a group of 20 applicants, you might have a cluster of folks who are pretty much at the top, and in that case, the council's duty is to send all of those names to the governor. In another group, you might have 2 or 3 that stand out, and the council's duty in those instances is to send just those names to the governor because it's supposed to send the best. And, you know, just the way the facts worked out, that happened to me. I was the chair of the council 2 times when the Supreme Court nominees were up. The first time there were 25 applicants, I think 18 or 19 interviewed. It was a pretty strong group in terms of a good group of people.
And
we sent 7 names to the governor, and he mentioned that. He talked about a former chief justice, that was I. And he saw me at a later event and he said, thank you very much. And I said, governor, don't thank me, I took no votes. And in fact, in my opinion, there was a pretty good group of people and they kind of clustered together and they all went up. 2 years later, there was a group of, I think, 14 or 12 that applied. We sent 2 names up. And he did call me after my term as chief ended and he said, you know, I don't think it's right to send only 2 names. And I said to him, I'll tell you what I said the last time. The council did its job. It's supposed to send the best, the tallest timber, and in that group, there were two names that were head and shoulders above the rest. And that is not to slight the people that didn't go.
Sure.
There were people that didn't go that had gone in an earlier group because they were kind of more clustered together. But out of that group, they only two made it. And I thought that was the correct vote. And so it's important to understand the council's job. It's to send the very best, and I think that's what they've done.
Mm-hmm. Judge Andrews, would you like to respond to what we heard?
Well, I guess my response is, as a judge, I don't necessarily look at perceptions. I'm looking at the evidence, and the evidence is simply not there to support the notion that the Chief Justice breaks ties in favor of against someone going to the governor, siding with attorneys against the public. It is 0.7%, less than 1% that's happened over a 30-year period. So whatever public perception is building it is a perception without any evidentiary basis. And as a judge, I think that's important to point out.
This constitutional amendment that was raised, it was proposed by Senator Pete Kelly, brought up last spring toward the end of the legislative session. It would have changed the makeup of the Judicial Council so that the governor's public appointees would outnumber attorney appointees, attorney members, by 2-1. In your opinion, both of you, as having long tenure on the bench, what would a change like that mean?
It would mean the politicization of the appointment of judges. It would end the merit selection process in Alaska. It would mean that judges are to be selected on a political basis rather than a merit selection basis. We've had this merit selection system for more than 50 years, and it has been a tremendous, tremendous asset to the people of the state. We select judges on merit, not on political persuasion, and as a result, we have a very fine judiciary. And I can say that having sat on the Conduct Commission for 20 years, we have one of the best judiciaries in the country, and it's the result of the fact that it's merit-based.
I agree with Judge Andrews' assessment. If the governor were to have six appointees to the council, there would be no check and balance on the notion that a person's political affiliation or political views would have an overwhelming influence in the selection. And don't get me wrong, I don't view politics as a bad word, and I don't think that there's no place for politics in the selection of judges. There is. Our framers set up a two-step process. The first step is the Judicial Council merit-based step. If you get through that, you're qualified, you're highly qualified for the job, and then the governor makes a choice. And the governor, who is there as a result of a political, partisan election, most likely is going to be looking for people who he or she thinks most closely the way the governor thinks.
Certainly.
And that's fine. That's appropriate. But if you give the governor two-thirds of the persons on the council, there's no guarantee that you're going to have the same merit-based selection the first time around. And the framers discussed this exact point, and they made clear that they wanted the first part to be, let's make sure that all of the people that get through are highly qualified, and then let the governor choose from among those. And I'll tell you what I testified in front of the legislature when this came up this last spring. I said, my testimony would be exactly the same whether Governor Parnell was the governor or Byron Mallott was the governor. At the time, he was the putative Democrat.
Sure.
And I said, I would be just as much against this system, no matter who you name as governor, because one person should not have that much power.
Mm-hmm.
The power should be diffuse, and the emphasis should be on merit in the first stage.
This idea this term, activist judge, activist courts, I don't recall that being a commonly used phrase a decade ago. Maybe I missed it, but is this something new? Is this kind of a different trend that you're seeing in politics and in the idea of looking at the merits of judges?
I think it's been around for a while. I first heard it, I think, when there were debates in front of the U.S. Senate on the appointment of, pardon me, confirmation of justices for the U.S. Supreme Court. I noticed in that piece that the reporter didn't define it, nor did the governor. And I think that's a shame, because I think we have to have consensus on what the term means. And I'll give you my definition. My definition of an activist judge is a judge, for a person who uses that term, is a judge who has made a decision with which that person does not agree. And the proof of that particular pudding, to me, is in regard to a case that was brought against the state of Alaska some years ago, challenging our judicial selection system, kind of on the grounds of this recent attempt to amend the Constitution. And the plaintiffs argued that the Alaska Constitution violated the federal Constitution equal protection and due process guarantees because the role of lawyers was too great in the selection. And they asked a federal judge in Alaska to rule that the Alaska Constitution, which was adopted by the people of this state and confirmed by the U.S. Congress when we were admitted to the Union, violated the federal Constitution. And that's exactly the kind of thing that folks on that side have been saying for years. Oh, people run into court with these constitutional principles and they get an activist judge to say the federal Constitution prohibits this or requires that. To me, it's a meaningless term. And I think unless you have a definition of it that is upfront, it's kind of useless to talk about it. Really, to me, it means a decision with which somebody disagrees.
Judge Andrews, would you like to comment on this idea of activist courts or judges?
I think I couldn't do better than what Justice Carpinetti has done.
Well, I would also like to get a question in about what is your sense of how often voters leave blank the decision on judges. There is a lot of information in the back of the voter guide. There's information online. But I do talk to people who say, I don't know about the judges, and I get in the ballot, the voting booth, and I'm not sure who to vote for, so I don't vote for judge retention. And it sounds as if there's a tremendous amount of work that goes into this process of surveying all the attorneys in the state and the legal system. Any idea of why this is happening, or a sense of how often people do not vote?
I think a lot of people don't finish the ballot. They get there and then they realize that they actually have not read the election pamphlet. They really don't know because judges are not out campaigning, and so they haven't been on the TV. There hasn't been someone knocking on your door, it's something we really need to work on in terms of civic education. There's just no question there needs to be more outreach into the community to say who we are. It's all there, but people need to take an interest. It's just because we're not in contested elections that there's relatively little public interest.
And I'd add a couple of things. First, I think there's a lot of election fatigue, especially in an election like this.
Yes.
I mean, all the air is sucked out of the room in all the big races. But the second thing is, I think, keyed to a word that you used in your question, and that is the word work. And you were talking about the work the council does. I'd use it in terms of, you know, democracy takes work. Mm. And if you want to cast a vote that's informed, you got to go to the website and you got to read what's there. There's a wealth of information. Now, if people aren't interested, I can understand that. I think it's a shame. I think judges make important decisions and they affect people's lives, and people in Alaska have the right to be heard on whether that person stays on the bench. And so I think it's worth the time and the work, but it does take work, and people need to do it if they want to cast an informed vote. But it's simply not accurate to say, well, I don't know anything about the judges, how can I be expected to vote? What you can be expected to do is go to the website and read about the judges, read what the peace officers say, read what the other lawyers say, find out how often the judge is reversed, find out how often the judge is preempted, knocked off a case. I mean, there's a wealth of information there, but you got to go read it.
Do you have a sense of, we just have a minute left, do you have a sense that maybe it's confusing for people? Because I have talked to folks who've said, I don't understand the rating system. And so is there any thought about, maybe more legal public forums to help educate people about what this process is? And it just seems that there needs to be more interaction between the public so that they can go in the booth and feel like they can make a confident decision on judges. Any thoughts about something else that could happen here in this respect?
Well, the Fair and Impartial Courts Committee definitely has an outreach campaign going to try and get to public groups, schools, you name it, we're out there and available to go talk to any public group that wants to learn more about judicial selection and retention and how the system works. There is a Bar Association committee called Fair and Impartial Courts, and they're happy to come and talk to your group about this whole process.
Okay, so there is a good outreach campaign going on then.
Let me add one other thing. I know the council's really interested in having good outreach. They recently created this knowyourjudges.org, I think, website. And they're interested in ways to get the information out and
good.
Get people working at it. But I'd also return to the idea that citizens have to step
they
up to
do
the
have
plate,
to,
too.
Yes, democracy does take work.
Yeah.
That's absolutely true. Thank you so much for being here, Justice Carpinetti and Judge Andrews, for being here today. And hopefully this program and others will help people realize that there is a lot of information out there for you to access, both online and in your voter guide. There's a lot of information about the judges and the work of the Judicial Council. Tuesday is the final day to vote. You can vote early up until then. Please do your homework and do a good job when you make your vote on Election Day. Thank you so much for being here with us.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.